Stephanie Rieger. This is a discussion today on shared parenting. Can and or should fathers mother? Let me start out first by saying what I mean by mothering. I'm referring to the deep emotional involvement with children. Having children be, having your child be a part of your consciousness all the time, acting on that. We hear the expression quality time. I really don't like that expression because I don't think that you can divide time up into chunks, some of which is quality time, and some of which doesn't count. I think it all counts in some way or another. But that's what I'm referring to, that involvement, immersion in parenting, concern about the child so that you think about who's going to babysit tonight. Responsibility for the child is really shared. And I have three questions, two of which you're going to answer for me, and one of which I'll give you some information from. The first question is, why do we want a different model? I'm presenting shared parenting as a different model from the traditional family where mother is the primary person who's responsible for the child. Father, of course, loves the children, cares about them, is involved with them somewhat, but doesn't have that deep immersion in the child's life and development that mother does. That's the traditional model. I'm putting shared parenting over here at this end as a contrast to the traditional model. Is it good for kids? What's it going to do for kids? We're very fortunate to have a child development expert with us, Jane. And I hope she talks, and I also hope you talk some about what you think. Does it do the same thing for boys as it does for girls, if we have dad involved in a very intensive way? Is it good for kids? Might it be bad for kids? I don't know. I'll see what you think about that. The second question is, what does it do for the father? Is it good for him? Is it bad for him in certain ways? We can certainly think about if he's spending more time with his kids, which is what one of the things that I'm talking about, he's going to be spending less time doing other things. What's that going to mean for his life overall? And what's he going to get out of this? And third, what really happens? I have a friend who is a researcher in Berkeley, California, who just completed a very interesting study of a group of people who very consciously and deliberately tried to share parenting. These are people who came out of the 60s and they wanted fathers to be very involved. And she just finished a study of what goes on in families, how mother reacts, how father reacts. And I'll tell you some of that a little bit later after you answer the first two questions for me. So, where do you want to start? I'm going to start with, is it good for kids? Is it good for dad? Where would you like to start? What brought you to this room today as opposed to one of the two other rooms or one of the many mountains outside? Or the coffee pot or wherever you could be?
Well, starting with two. I was amazed at the number of men that I've met, and I work for state government, but it's just so easy. I mean, the number of who've skipping over the whole problem of divorce and remarriage, but who've gone through that process and have started a second family, and what they say that they're getting out of being more involved with their children, and they were too busy with their younger bodies and so forth, be involved in the ability to be getting a lot of caring and nurturing, satisfaction out of that.
I have a friend who's a 58-year-old person who has one set of children, the youngest of whom is a junior in college, maybe, who also has a 3-year-old and a 6-week-old. And his experience with the second set of children is very different, partly because his wife is expecting and demanding certain different things from him, but he's really in there changing diapers in a way that he never was with the first set of kids.
I can see myself in that position, but of course, right now I'm established financially, and you know, I got all this career things behind me. I'm surprised I didn't drown in a sea of responsibilities in my 20s. So, you know, they are in a different situation, but these men really are appreciating the second time.
Do you hear any grumbling from the men under their breath? Or is it mostly positive?
It's been mostly positive.
Somebody over here at a conference.
This is say, my kids are older, a little bit older now, they're 14 and 11, but by lucky happenstance, I think my husband was in graduate school when our first was born, and so he was home and available and entered real, I think because of the process of preparing fathers for the to share childbirth, that it hooks them in early. And it flowed naturally out of that. And I think one of the things that he would say of why it's good for him and his dad is because it's good for me as mom. And so especially during the early childhood years when they're much more dependent, he was married not only to mom, but he had a wife because I was free. You know, so not only did he gain some things just through the act of bothering, you know, and stuff, but I think also because I could be a more whole person. And then, you know, we had a better marriage as a result, and that made it good for him.
That's an angle I really hadn't thought about. I'm glad you brought that up. Well, if this is so terrific for men, why haven't they done more of it before this?
It's like a woman trying to have a career and family.
So what's the negative side of it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's strange. You're reading all the women's literature about it. It's strange being a super mom and having a career. The father experiences the same strains. That's one part of it.
Negative side, I think was your question. First of all, I'm not coming from a child development background. I'm coming from a very personal place.
Fine.
I have three children, and they each are the shared parenting, and each in a very different model of shared parenting. But for each of the three men, it's meant lack of progression in a material way up the professional ladder. And they have purposely chosen not to spend 60 hours in the office, but to reduce it, or to make arrangements, or to go for 30 hours a week instead of a full-time job, or some of those kinds of things. And that's a today's society sort of, it's okay, and it's just beginning to be okay. I think the expectation in the business world is still pretty much that if you are going to progress along the business ladder, you're going to spend so many hours and so much overtime at your job. And so it has been on the, if you want to say it's negative, I don't think they don't happen to think so, but you have to make that purposeful decision that that's not your main goal.
I think there's so much about child raising that is unpleasant. But I wouldn't exchange my experience for anything, but I went through a period of time when I was attempting, I didn't have any choice but to work. I had a very low salary as a teacher. I was teaching two extra jobs. I was trying to write a book. And I was the primary parent. My wife was in school, going back preparing for seminary. And I think I felt for years that it wasn't a minute for me. That you get up in the morning to children needing breakfast, changed, whatever else to be done, prepared, you take them to the sitter, you go to work, you come home from work, you pick them up, you bring them home, you fix them supper, you do what you have to do, beginning from when ages 4 and 1 on. And most of the time it was shared, some of the time it was more, I had some of the greater responsibility. And one of the negative things for me was rage. I just, you know, I was doing it because I believed in it, and I would choose it again. But I didn't have anything for me. And I was not in a position where I could afford to work fewer hours. I was not in a position where I didn't could even not choose not to work extra. And I don't feel that at all anymore. I have a really good feeling about the past, but I have to affirm, of course, when we're talking about this, that it's a feeling many women who must have, who go to work and then come home and are expected to be responsible for the house and the children. And it, I didn't feel as if it was unjust, because we had both mutually chosen what situation we're in. I wasn't enraged because I felt it was unfair. I was enraged because there was just nothing left for me, even to carry out the commitments we had chosen to make. Mm-hmm. So it was partly against myself.
That's a hard situation. My husband was in medical school and then residency. And we had one child and then had a child in his second year of residency, and I was working full time during that time. Mm-hmm. And I think we were both just barely making it. And it wasn't, you know, he has always been involved with our kids. He loves kids, but the realities of the medical profession are the hours are just not there. And even now that he's in private practice, he really struggles with trying to control the demands on his time. Between early morning committee meetings that he needs to go to, or early morning continuing education meetings, and evening meetings, and late hours the days he's on call. There are many 12-hour days, and that's just the reality of his life.
So even if he believes in shared parenting,
the reality is it's really not. And time commitment's not possible. And what happens is then that he becomes the fun parent, because he comes home and he's ready for fun and games. And he enjoys doing that kind of things with the kids, but he misses out on some of the nitty-gritty stuff.
And how do you feel about that?
Not real good sometimes. I did go away for a week in March, and he took spring break off and was home with the kids. And that was, I went to a conference and he was there with them. And it was a good experience. I had a great time, and he had a good week with the kids.
So in some ways, it reminds me of what Jane said about your sons-in-laws having chosen to not be in professions where you have that much of a commitment, even if they might have wanted to be, or maybe they didn't want to be, whatever. So there are some jobs that make it real hard to do that. And now that there are more women in medical school, it's real tough on them.
I saw some couples who were both doctors and just shook my head, because I don't see how they do it.
Well, we've heard a little bit from this gentleman who was talking about rage.
I know the rage I experienced sometimes when he was in medical school, and I didn't have a choice of working or not, and I was so tired all the time. And yet it wasn't really fair to say, even though I did say, hey, you've got to do more, that meant that he really didn't do as well in some of his classes as he wanted to. And it was a difficult choice for him to make.
Did you have a hand up for you again?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that all these things depend on the stage you're in your life, and I'm still with children aged 3 to 8 and approaching 40-year midlife crisis. And I have a number of friends now where they're working couples and have younger children, delayed parenthood. And they are now going through the stage of getting vasectomies and then getting divorces, basically. And they, I have a couple, not that one leads to the other, but this is just the cycle. These things go in cycles, and that's a cycle I'm in. But I have a couple friends whose wives just said to them in the last few weeks, we both have careers, we have kids, and we have a marriage, and we can't support all three of those. There isn't enough time, and the marriage is the thing that's going. Something has to go, and it's the marriage. And I think that's not my personal situation, but I think when you have two people being professional, and it does, shared parenthood is something that's either demanded or comes about naturally, and it allows the woman to develop a career. And that means that that the woman gets out of the home and starts to express herself more. And a lot of times the father comes home and takes the responsibilities, and there really isn't much of a marriage left because the father is so intimately involved with the children. Even if there's a little bit of time left at the end of the day, there isn't a mental marriage left to interact. So I think that does go, whether it ends in divorce or just forestalling the marriage until you get beyond the kids, I don't know.
Forestalling the marriage until you get beyond the
kids? Well, just basically saying that you're having a marriage through jointly raising children, but you don't necessarily have that much of it.
Oh, I see.
Of a shared relationship or intimate relationship at the time that you have young children.
If you're also trying to do a full-time career.
If you're doing a career plus kids.
Mm-hmm. Dare we think about the fact that in some marriages, the nurturing genes went to the father rather than to the mother. Mm-hmm. And then you have to look at this differently, I think, about who's got the gifts for this age child. Mm-hmm. And those are difficult decisions to hard on both sides, I think, to come to that.
That's a good point. I think something you just said at the very end of that, too, for this age child, I know we've found it going like this in terms of who, you know, who's the stronger parent at the time, depending on the age and stage of the kids, and who, fortunately, we've kind of counterbalanced. We weren't both good at little ones and both good at teenagers. We seem to complement each other that way. Mm-hmm. I think we do enjoy parenting more, or better skilled or gifted for parenting at different ages and stages. I love an older.
So do I. That myth of women loving infants. Given to me when they're about two, and then okay, before that, forget. Well, to some extent, you're answering my first question about, is it good for kids? If you have both parents really involved and they have different skills and different interests, then the kids get some stuff they wouldn't have gotten if they only have one person who's really parenting. So it is good for kids. Isn't it?
I think that's what happened with us, that I think in general it's really been a good experience because we've both been able to share in virtually everything. And then share mutually together, I mean, to a great extent, when you work in the marriage, you're working on how you can parent well, and that can draw you closer together to deal with that. I had a specific question I wanted to ask about number one. It's okay. What happens when you talked yesterday about when a woman bonds with her children and the male breaks away?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the male bonds with a female child, or the child bonds with the male child, or the male husband? Father, how does that break away in a similar way in which males break away from their mothers? How does a female break away from being bonded to the father?
maybe I would put it in different terms, but I should tell you first, I'm not sure I know the answer to that because I haven't really, I believe a lot in research and I haven't seen much research. It's only in the past 5 or 10 years that there's been research on fathering as in what happens when father's around. If you look at the research literature before about 10 years ago, what you find is a lot of research on father absence. It's ironic, there were a great many studies about when father dies or goes off to war or divorce or whatever, but there were very few studies until about 10 years ago on what happens when father's present and what impact he makes on the kids. So to some extent, I don't know the answer to your question. What do you think happens?
Well, I guess what I'm concerned about is the dependency of the female child on myself. I think the youngest one is too emotionally dependent on me.
What do you mean when you say emotionally dependent?
Clinging. Uh-huh. And excessively needing my approval for things. Or fighting it. I mean, she can be dependent in fighting it as well, which I see.
It's interesting. I would have speculated something different. And what I would have speculated is that the more father is involved and the more she gets approval and attention from father, the less she goes around needing it. Somebody asked a question last night. This isn't fair to you who weren't there last night, but now you'll be curious and want to listen to the tape. So. I'll do it anyway. Somebody a female talked about why is it that she always wanted approval from men, that the people who were really important in giving her a sense of being okay were men. And I thought about it a lot afterwards, and what I thought about saying to her was that it seems in traditional families, father's approval is a fairly scarce commodity, and therefore it's a very desirable resource, because in traditional families, father just isn't there a lot. I mean, either he's not there physically in that he's the doctor and he's, you know, on call 42 hours a day or things like that, or when he's there, he's not really there. He comes home from work, he's very tired, he wants to relax or read the newspaper, and let's tiptoe around him so we don't bother him. And that makes his approval and his involvement even more important because it is a scarce resource. But what you're saying is something different. So it's hard for me to explain that without knowing a lot more about the dynamics of the whole family.
I don't know what the recent research is, and the research I am familiar with is like 15 years old. But, and is it good for kids department? What was good for kids was if each parent was consistent with his own system, and I'm going to talk about discipline, that's what the studies came out of, mm-hmm. But where they tried to be each other or to pick up each other's system, it was consistently confusing for the children and not good for kids. Mm-hmm. But if parents were themselves and consistently themselves, then the children were able very early to discriminate the expectations of each and to adjust, and that was felt to be good preparation for them for the world in which they were to live. Mm-hmm. So that they have more than one kind of input on how the world treats or how they're treated and what the expectations are. Mm-hmm. But that's 15 years old, I don't think it's changed.
I'm sure that's true, and I think that's another argument for getting grandparents involved too, because then there are more caring, powerful figures who give you more views on what the world is like. There must be a limit at some point.
I've got to tell a grandparent story then. It has to do with this, because just the week before we came, we had with us a granddaughter who was just 6 and who was an adult at the table, very mannerly, you know, chews or all that sort of thing. And I said, Emily, it's such a joy to have you here. You have such good manners. And she says, my daddy did that. And she's right. He was so tough on her, and I had to shut my grandmother mouth. But she is able to see now that that was his contribution to this part of her life, so it works.
So often you hear about little girls being able to manipulate their daddy. And it goes on through the years. Does that stem from this early, or is it a natural sort of thing that little girls are very fine with it? I mean, they learn early how, you know, good favors from him, and it doesn't work for mother, she knows she can work for dad. Where does this stem from?
I'm sort of taken aback because I think little boys try to do that just as much as little girls. I mean, I think kids try to get what they want.
I know they balance it off. It seems like it's more down with girls and dads. I think. I don't know what research says on that.
I don't know either. I haven't looked at that. Do you want to speak to that?
Well, I know my kids always come to me and want to go to a movie or go do something with that. I said, what'd your mother say? No. Well, that's the answer. You know, and they just go. I tripped the first few times. Go ahead, and then the wife got mad at me, and then we had a fire with that. Yeah, it's just something happens. My boy does it, my girls do it. It's a constant battle sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Got a
hand up for you?
Yeah. I just was kind of reflecting on that a little bit, and also just thinking of the whole, some of the things that person right here said earlier about being able to talk it over with the kids. I think the whole notion of shared parenting, one of the values of it that makes it good for kids and good for the marriage is if it's not just sharing the workload, but it's really shared decisions, talking over, you know, how we're going to do discipline, how we're going to make decisions that the kids bring to us, that one of the things that I think the literature shows is that the parent coalition that is strengthened, and there's a consistency, and that's always good for kids, because when kids can play their parents off of each other, mm-hmm. sometimes there's a lot of confusion. It also contributes to things like sibling rivalry, you know, because you then are competing for, you know, and all that stuff. So I want to think about this. I think some of the values are not just the shared workload, but if the parents really are discussing, mm-hmm. are really sharing the parenting, they're not just sharing the workload.
Right, you know what I mean? Right, sure. And that can be an important bond in the marriage. Mm-hmm. Let me say a little bit about, and then I'll get to your question, Bertrude, about some of the things I see as ways in which it's good for girls and good for boys differently, because I think it may be, and again, this is speculation, haven't seen the research, we sort of put the research up there, maybe I'm doing this more than anybody else, as the truth when I don't think it is the truth, but it's helpful. I think that for little girls, having daddy really involved gives them approval, a sense of I'm okay as a female. That's really important. And that they need early on. If they don't get that, I think that lots of women, when they grow up, look for that approval constantly in their lives and find it very hard to satisfy the need for that approval. People talk about, well, I can't give my child too much praise, I'll spoil him or her. I really don't hold with that notion at all. I think the more honest praise you give, and when I say honest, I mean you're praising them for something they really did well, or you really feel love towards them, so you express that love, the more genuine goodies you give them, the less they're going to need it later on, and the less they're going to be spoiled. So I think if girls get that from their fathers, a real sense of love and involvement from another parent. Also love and involvement in some way that's hard for me to articulate for their femaleness. That's okay, that's good. Your body is strong and beautiful and that's okay. Maybe I'm just sensitive to this because this is something that I know I think about. Children's size is something that's important. I had somebody at my house who had a little boy who was five, who was small for five. My kid is big for three. And the parent kept talking about how small her child was. And I just wanted to tell her, stop, look at what you're doing. I heard a dad talking about how big his little girl was, his little girl was six. You know? I mean, what does it mean to be big for six? Who knows what six should be like? So the more approval and appreciation and positive things little girls get, the more they're getting it, they're going to internalize that and then be able to give that to themselves. And the more they feel that, the more they're getting a model of a relationship with a male that's really good. And I think that's setting themselves up for lots of good things and being able to relate to men comfortably when they get old. For little boys, daddy's involvement, I think, gives them a model of being male that is much richer and much fuller and much more flexible than little boys get in a traditional family where dad just isn't around a lot. So little boys get their model of what it's like to be male from their peers, from cartoons, from what they see in the media, from all of those sources that are removed and that are one-dimensional. And the more daddy is involved, the more flexibility they see in maleness, and I think that's really all to the good. Now let me jump ahead to number three. What really happens? Well, we don't know for sure what really happens in all cases, and I'd be real curious to know, Jane, if your children's experience fits with what I'm about to say. My friend did this study in Berkeley. This is not your typical group of parents in Berkeley. These are people who came out of the anti-war movement, had been involved in a lot of things that were going on. You think of Berkeley, you get an idea of what these people are like. And they very consciously, all of these parents decided, the men and women, the pairs, decided to co-parent, to really share parenting down to the nitty-gritty. And what happened? Well, first of all, what happened to Dad? Dad loved it. Dad loved it and still does. The kids in the study are maybe four or five, so these are little tiny kids we're talking about. And Dad was right there starting at the first Lamaze class, if not before, you know, talking to the child in the womb, etc. The emotional intimacy with the child was a wonderful discovery for these fathers, and they loved it. And it's, the movie Kramer versus Kramer gives us a sort of hint at that, of the gratification that men get when they realize it's okay to hug my kid and love my kid and really get to know my kid and all the good stuff that they're getting from their kids. The emotional intimacy was wonderful. On the other hand, that's what they picked up on and what they did a lot of. On the other hand, what they didn't do a lot of and what they didn't think about was a lot of what I call maintenance work. I'm hearing groans. You won't be quizzed as you leave the room about who washes your child's clothes and who puts them in the drawer and who even thinks to buy the clothes and who thinks that we're going to need a babysitter tomorrow and who's the one who goes around and interviews all the preschools or the babysitters and who takes the child to the doctor and who remembers that the child has to be taken to the doctor. The list of things that have to be done for a little kid are enormous. Who keeps that list in their head? Well, even with these people who tried as hard as anybody has tried to really share parenting, most of those lists were still kept in mom's head. Even if dad did some of the work, it was mom saying, hey, little so-and-so has to go to the doctor. Can you take him? Can you get out of work or whatever? But the lists tend to be kept in mom's head. She remembers the maintenance stuff. And she's not real happy about it because she thought they were getting into an equal deal here. I see some gleams in some people's eyes. It's maybe striking a few response support.
I was thinking of the written list I left from your husband when I left.
It would have been real interesting. I don't know if you want to experiment on your kids, but I wonder what would have happened if you didn't leave a written list. I mean, to some extent, the moms keep that list because, to some extent, they don't want to let go of that list. Now, a lot of moms do want to let go of the list and find that there's this abyss where nobody takes the kid to the doctor. The kid has no clean clothes, et cetera, or no clothes or whatever. But one of the things that the mothers discovered, to their surprise, was that they weren't as delighted as they thought they had been when everybody sat around in a room having these intellectual discussions about shared parenting. When it got down to the actual parenting, there's some things that they weren't real happy about, and they weren't real happy about not being happy about them. For example, the emotional intimacy between the child and parent. Now, from a distance, they would say, that's wonderful, I'm really happy that my husband is very involved with my children. Up close, how do you think they felt? They were jealous. One of the reasons they were jealous and they were a bit angry was because they felt, the women felt, they had worked for years to get these men to open up to them, to be emotionally open, to be spontaneous, to be free, to be really expressive. And here these men finally were doing all these wonderful things, but they were doing it with Junior and not with Mom. So Mom was thinking, all this work I've put into getting this man to open up and really help him and feel safe and all that, the kid's getting the payoff, which is great, but it's still not going to meet. So the moms were less than thrilled with that. And they were somewhat jealous. And some of the moms realized that they had given up power in the family and they were less happy with that. They hadn't realized that they were doing that beforehand. Which is not to say they wanted that power back, but for some of the moms, the family was the place where they had power. The home had been traditionally their domain. They had say over which preschool the kid would go to in traditional families. Moms would decide those things. And they didn't feel like they had a lot of power out in the work world, because the work world is tough on women. Can I assume that we agree with that? I don't know if I should assume we agree with that, but I don't want to get into a lot of that. That may be another session. But they found that they went out to work and they had a lot of difficulties in their job, and they had difficulty climbing up the managerial ladder if that's what they wanted, or they were in jobs that didn't give them a lot of power and control because the work world is difficult for women. And then they came home and they had lost some power that they had had in the home. So when they realized that, they weren't totally thrilled with that either. Although they would not change shared parenting, they would still continue to share parenting. There were some surprises in it for everybody, I'll put it that way. I'm real curious to know what the kids are going to be like when the kids have children. And I wonder if the kids, in their way of rebelling against their parents, as we all do, are going to go back to a very traditional upbringing in the way that children... I'm in a women's group, and at one stage, all the daughters of the women in the women's group wanted to wear these Scarlett O'Hara dresses with 10 petticoats under them, painted fingernails and all that, and all the women in the women's group, who usually don't wear makeup, maybe once a year put on stockings, etc. The mothers had a lot of trouble with that, although the mothers let their daughters do it, which I think is real good. Fortunately, the daughters got over that phase. The mothers were real glad for a lot of reasons, among them being washing 13 petticoats is a real drag. But for other, perhaps more important reasons too, the daughters went through that stage and then didn't have to do that anymore. So I wonder if these children of shared parents are going to, at some point, the little boys will grow up to want a wife who stays home and cooks dinner for them and has it hot on the table. I don't know. Maybe not. We'll see.
I think economically that's just not going to happen anymore. I mean, it's so, like the housing market, when one salary goes to the house,
right.
It seems to me that we really have moved away from one person going to work and one person staying.
I think we have some new models of family. For example, one model of family, and this is not far away from my own family, is mother, father, child, and babysitter. In a lot of ways, that is our family. It's like people used to joke that an Indian family 30 years ago was the Indian mother, father, grandparents, children, and an anthropologist. Today, the babysitter is a very important person. I work full-time, my husband works full-time. The babysitter is with our kid from 8:30 to 4:30 every day. So she has a big impact on him. And we talk with her about how his development is going, and we listen to her input, and we respect her, or we wouldn't have hired her. But that's one model, and I should say we can afford that, and a lot of people can't. So that's one model. Another model is to have parents cooperatives, where the parents get together and share child rearing, or the grandparents get more involved, or whatever. But the traditional model of the isolated nuclear family is a tough one to find these days.
It really only lasted, you know, I think people have kind of this idea that a nuclear family has been going on for hundreds of years, but it really only lasted about 40 or 50 years.
In both of our son's family, I think they went ahead and proved that these both parents do not have to work. Both wives, nurse and CPA, made more than the boys did. And when the children came along, mm-hmm. it took a lot of prayer to decide just, you know, about the children. Both wives and the husband together decided that the mothers would stay home and take care of the children. And it meant giving up over half of their money to live on. But they felt the Lord was with them in this decision, and they made this big step, and they did it. Mm-hmm. And each time you visit with them, they are overwhelmed how the Lord has taken care of them. And it's like, they'll say, I can't imagine, it's like we hardly notice the difference. Now that is almost unbelievable, isn't it, when they've taken away over half of the salaries. And yet, they just love this, the mother. And one of the mothers is like is not a natural mother. She's almost a businesswoman to start with. And it just amazes me that she has made this decision to stay home and take care of her child. Both of them just can't now, at this stage, even think of letting anyone else ever have that responsibility of guiding their child. And something else that is good has come out of it. This family is now moving into a brand new house this week, which they thought was an impossibility. And it was, except that the Lord has did this for them. Money-wise, it's like it's a miracle. And it is.
Differentness in feeding there, because you have two women who have been successful in their professional life and feel good about that. So that the decision to do the more traditional role is a very purposeful decision instead of one which is foisted upon them.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a little different feeling, I think.
It's also a privilege. Not all women have that privilege.
Right. A lot of families, if you cut their income in half, they just couldn't survive. They couldn't feed their kids. So it is a privilege.
I just wanted to support what you said about the studies, because I think that I felt many of those same things. I think that since the women usually do the maintenance things, that in a way the emotional closeness you get as payment for doing the diapers. If you do the diapers, then when the child falls down, you want the child to run to the mother and not want the father. And when the child runs to the father and says, Mommy, go away, It's like a real slap in the face. And you say, well, why did I wash your diapers and cook your cereal this morning? And I wanted to, I think you probably will say you don't know the answer to this question, but one question I have, you said it's good for girls to have fathers there and et cetera, which I would agree upon, but agree with. But what about the impact on boys of not just having a father there and being richer for that, but not having a mother there so much? Has there been anybody looking at that? I think I've always worked with my kids, and you do have the feeling, because of your upbringing, that somehow, no matter how good of a parent you are, you're somehow robbing them of something, and I'm not even quite sure what that something is. But have there been any studies looking at that?
I don't know of any studies. I mean, specifically, the thing that comes to my mind is the studies that the people who talk about the traditional world of little boys being a world of females, mother, kindergarten teacher, babysitter, etc., are usually almost always female. So when the boys are at their more helpless state and more dependent state, there are all these powerful females around. And some people who are more psychoanalytically inclined argue that later on men have difficulty in intimate relations with women because they feel that that closeness and dependency may put them back in that helpless and powerless state. So breaking up some of mom's power might be good. And sharing that power with dad might be good in that it makes powerful women less threatening. I don't know, if it's speculation, it's a hard idea to test.
Have there been any studies on father's role and how boys develop, nurture little boys? I'm just thinking about my two children. I have a girl who's 3.5 and a boy who's 1.5. And we were gonna try real hard to kind of break the stereotypes, you know, and we handed her trucks and balls and things, and she wasn't interested in any of that stuff. She wanted a doll and she plays with it. And so the boy came over and still kind of do this, and we handed him dolls and things like that, and he wasn't interested at all. He wanted was a ball to throw. It's a real disappointment to me. I just wonder if there's any studies on that. I realize people are different.
Well, I have a girl who will play with nothing but trucks and a boy that only plays with dolls, so I'll change it.
I don't know of the studies. There probably are, I just don't know. I don't know. I'm thinking of my own kid. We don't have any guns in our house. We've never encouraged him to have a gun. So he takes, you know, bristle blocks are. He makes a gun or he picks up a stick and he goes up to total strangers and he goes, bang, bang, I'm going to knock your block off. And then we sort of, I've never seen before as that kid. So those things happen. In some ways, it's like the, in some ways, I don't know, this is speculation. I mean, kids will, if you say, gee, this is a wonderful toy, don't you really want to play with this? You know, they'll go look for that. I don't know if that's what's going on.
I don't know of any studies, but one of the things that I kind of noticed is that I think a lot, I see a lot more boys babysitting and stuff and being asked to babysit. I was really flattered recently because a mother of younger children after a church picnic or something said, gee, did your son ever babysit? He's really good with kids. And I thought, well, that's exciting to me because usually they just like, well, who are the teenage girls in the congregation they can ask to babysit? And I had seen the boys being asked to babysit, offering to work in a nursery and church. And maybe that's a spillover. And it just says that they're comfortable in that role that has been modeled for them.
I think that is terrific. But you got to get boys when they're below a certain age. I don't know what the
the age of 12 or 13 or so. Above that age, their peers will sort of make fun of, I think, I don't know. But boys around 9, 10, 11, and maybe some younger ones, maybe some older ones, who are real interested in kids. And kids are fun, and they like to play and all that. And the more boys babysit or are around kids or do some of that, the more comfortable they're going to be as parents themselves. So I think it's wonderful preparation for them. I think it's great.
I have a daughter that lives in Sweden, married there, married in Sweden, and she has two children now. And they have parental leave from their jobs, both of them. And the father was home for 3 months now there. I mean, he's in there at the very beginning, shares on all the nitty-gritty stuff, and being up at night, walking the floor, feeding the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Loves what he's doing. And, I mean, the sharing is wonderful. And I met a lot of other young couples at the same time I was there. I thought the parenting was excellent with these groups that I saw. And the one friend had twins. She only had one child, and a year later had the twins. So there was a lot of work to be done. Her husband was a teacher and was allowed to have a year's leave of absence to be home and help her parent. And I thought about that in this country. I know there's some companies thinking about it, but I also wonder about the abuse over here, that they would just take that and use it as vacation, paid vacation time. Now, I don't know how it's controlled, but it was good to see it, good to see it work.
One of the things that's come up over and over again is the way that our country doesn't support families and doesn't support children. We give a lot of lip service to children in terms of really putting the money there and making the commitment, like a 1 year's parental leave of absence with a job guaranteed support for the family during that time. Those things are very rare here, and we obviously need them. Yeah.
I'm going to be interested in seeing what we can find out about the effects on people's work of fathers doing work with kids. I mean, it seems to me sometimes that I can tell the difference in a work setting between people, between fathers who have done stuff intimately with their children and raised them, and fathers who haven't. That there's something one learns about the world of that work, some sort of flexibility and humility that you don't get in the normal work world, right? Mm. And it has to be, I think corporations may be somewhere unconsciously aware of that, right? That there's something less manageable about people who have experienced the world of work as it exists in a family with children. And the boundaries are not very well set, and you don't get orders that are easily taken. I mean, corporations may know exactly what they're doing and making it very difficult for fathers to be fathers.
And you're really talking about subtle differences in how people work with each other.
I think so.
That would be really interesting to look at.
Unwillingness to sort of accept very clear definitions of what
I remember Dan's reaction, my husband's reaction after our son was born. He thought, why would anybody want to go to work when there's this wonderful creature at home, you know, to watch and play with and examine and all that? That feeling didn't last terribly long. But it was there. I mean, that the family really pulled him away from work. And the family was so much more important than anything going on in the outside world. And if that really persisted for a long time, who knows what would happen. Work would be less important. Now people organize their lives around work. I mean, imagine how things would be different if people organized their lives around their family. Time when you put in the most hours might be when your kids have grown up and left home. Put in the most hours of work. Instead of now, the time when usually you put in the most hours of work or when your kids are real little and you can least afford to. So the world of work would really be turned upside down if life was organized for the convenience of families and the support of families, and work was sort of something you did when you could handle it, as opposed to
the other way around. Parenting something you squeeze in between.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if a lot of this is connected with fathers being at the birth of their children. Because for me at least, especially their first child, just holding that child the first few minutes and looking in its eyes and showing around the room and talking to it was, I think, for me, just tremendous event that I'll never forget. The bonding that I felt there was just immediate and lasting.
It would be interesting to see if that's one of the things going on. Is that true of other men?
I'm sure that that's true, but I guess I would disagree with that becoming too strong of a thought because I'm very aware of the number of kids needing to be adopted and wanted to put in this push for adoption since we've done both. The first, when a woman bears a child, no matter how much the father participates in the birth, the child is still the mother's, especially if the mother's nursing it. The mother has control over the child and is the one that has to be physically there if you're nursing for a long time after the child is born. Plus, the mother has had the influence even when the child is in the womb. And I know when we adopted, the minute that our son got off the airplane, he was my husband's boy. He used to call my husband Uma in Korean, which was the word for mother. And there was an incredible bond there that never could have been there with the birth child. And my husband is still basically our son's mother. And it's a wonderful opportunity. I think that people concerned about kids should really consider adoption because of the benefits it gives to the father right from the beginning. Of being the most important person.
Or at least both mother and father start off equal.
Equal, and a lot of times with older Korean kids it happens. It's been my experience that the child often wants
more. Interesting, because their youngest is adopted and we both have the same experience of sharing the first year.
Yeah. It's wonderful, but it's just such an incredible experience that I don't think the father can have at the birth, but he can have at the moment of the birth.
I don't agree. I think the father can have it both at birth and at the adoption, because I had that experience at the birth, and I'd say with my second child, it was less of that feeling at birth and more of that kind of growing experience later. I mean, the bonding for my second child really happened over a long period of time.
So maybe there's not one set way parents and kids get bonded. You mentioned something else that really struck a responsive note in me because you were talking about nursing. I really believed in shared parenting and I believed in nursing, and I found it real hard to do both. If you're nursing the kid, you're the one who's there. If you're getting up in the middle of the night to nurse, you may as well be the one that changes the diapers. Although if I had another child, I wouldn't do that. I think it's important for the father to participate as much as possible. But the closeness and intimacy that's established during nursing, it's difficult to replicate. It's not impossible to have a lot of those good things if father's feeding the child. But there's a real bond there that I found very difficult to integrate with fully shared parenting during the first 6 months of my child's life. So there were some contradictions in that that made it difficult. Okay, so we have a positive, hopeful note to end us on. Jody, would you do it again as a shared parent?
Oh, absolutely.
What's the best thing you've gotten out of it?
I think a sense of perspective on the rest of my life.
When I saw Kramer versus Kramer, I remember just crying tears of enormous gratitude that I had had that experience with my children and without a divorce. It was wondering, just grateful that as a human being I had experienced.
I would like to end these sessions on a positive note. Thank you.